This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 240, brought to you by InStock Trades and iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 240. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm literally here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello, Ron.
Hey, Connor, how's the kitchen?
It's nice.
All right, it's good. And over in New York is Josh Flanagan.
Feeling left out.
We are the fine gentlemen behind the website ifanboy.com, which is all about comic books. And every week we read a whole bunch of comic books that come out on Wednesday, and then one of us picks the one that we feel was our pick of the week, the one that we like the most, and write a review of it on that website. Then we come here to talk about that book, and as well as the other books that came out during the week. I'm gonna warn you that Connor's in the other room, so he should be warned of that.
And I'm not wearing pants.
He's not wearing any pants, yep.
He's been eating a lot of baked fish. I don't know what that means.
No, and we're going to talk about what happens in the books, so we might spoil something. So be warned. If you haven't read your comic books, press pause, come back later, and you can then enjoy the podcast and not have it ruined for you so you don't have to cry.
You just spun out there.
I did. I totally did.
I don't know. What are we doing?
So Josh had the pick this week. Josh? Take it away.
Yeah, I know a lot of you out there are like, oh man, I really wish that Joshy could have picked another Avengers book, but you know, I can't do that forever, everyone.
It's literally a week. It's like they should just make Avengers and make it a weekly.
We'll get to it. We're gonna get to this. Yeah, I went with Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark. I got it number one. Whatever, it's a one shot.
I know why you picked it.
Because they got mixed up.
Yep.
it's literally. That's the premise. Bear and Shark got mixed up. Why? I don't know. There's a little prose bit at the beginning that Robert Kirkman wrote. I didn't care about that part. I wasn't going to buy this because I was like, you know, it's like I remember. I don't know if you remember, but last year Ryan Ottley did a little book called Death Grub, which was like his 24-hour comic, and it was no story, just a bunch of pretty art and whatever. And I was like, I don't know if I'm in the mood for that, whatever. And I decided at the last minute, I was like, oh, I'll go ahead and get this because it'll be fun. And I'm sitting there. I read it on the train. And I just found myself continually laughing at the absurdity of the whole thing. And if you go to iFanboy and you see our Best of the Weekend panels that comes out on Thursday afternoons, you see a picture of just a bear sitting on the back, standing on the back of a boat, growling. There's bodies everywhere. It's just ridiculous. And I just saw that picture and I started laughing. I was like, I think I'm going to like this. And so what you've got is two stories. One is about a bear who hunts by sea, and the other is about a forest-born shark who hunts in the forest.
Which never gets explained. I love it.
Oh, that's really my favorite part. In the review, like it's almost not even enough to call high concept. Like it's that bare bones. Just like you know, it'd be funny. And so Jason Howard, who did the art on Astonishing Wolfman. With Robert Kirkman, and then Ryan Ottley, who does the art on Invincible and a bunch of other stuff with Robert Kirkman. They did these two stories. It's a little black and white. It's almost like a jam comic. Like it's just they did it in their spare time as a thing that's fun. It's really kind of loose and rough, and actually that added to it. Like at the end of it, I was just like, that was so damn pure. And it was just like every once in a while, you go, I don't need a long big story. I don't need like a ton of character development, intricate plotting. I just want to have fun. But the key to that is that when you do that, it has to be really good and it has to be really fun. And fortunately, this tapped into something that's a bit of a nerve with me. I think the sharks are terrifying and hilarious. and when you have a shark who emerges from the trees
and munches
for no reason and just bites the shit out of things. It's funny, and it keeps getting funnier.
It really does.
Over and over again.
well, you noted it, but Jason Howard and Ryan Ottley like wrote each of their own stories as well as drew them, and those two are funny guys.
Yes,
I'd have to give the edge and the funniness to the grizzly shark just because it had that little touch of humor. But as I said,
like at the beginning, it's ridiculous, and people are on the ocean and they're attacked by a bear, and then after that, there's a cyborg battle. I mean, and that's funny on its own. Just like the last panel was funny, just the bear head floating,
staring at you.
And I was like, "Wow, you know, Ottley, you're really gonna have to work for this because I really enjoyed that." And then the other story, it's funny because they both had a completely different tone, I guess. I feel like Ottley's the shark story was more slapsticky.
Yep.
Like it was a little more comedic, and like the jokes were even kind of dumb, but over the course of it, it got funnier.
Like, oh, it definitely practiced the rule of like first time kind of funny, second time annoying, third time comedy genius.
Oh, the torso kid.
Yeah. Yep.
Every time he showed up, I was like, "That's the one who lived through it. That's great." I had a hell of a lot of fun with this, and out of everything over the week, this was like the only. I looked at the end, I was like, "That was the only thing I gave 5 stars to." I guess that's your winner, and I was really happy because it's fun to be talking about a different kind of comic. And like I said, like the thing that was just for me so great about it was like it was just sort of pencils and inks. It was so it was raw. It was looked like it was hand lettered. Like I think when Jason Howard first signed on for Astonishing Wolfman, a lot of us, myself included, saw the art and went, you know, huh.
I think it's Astounding Wolfman.
Whatever. I'm going to get that wrong every time. And since then, I've read actually most of Astounding Wolfman, and I like it. I get why he chose him and everything. But I think in this, like, was the first time I really saw, since it was so raw, like, sort of what's good about Jason Howard. They're just big, you know, silly panels that are real dramatic, and the angles are fun, and it's just very comic booky. So that was one of the things I really liked about it too.
Well, one of my favorite things was in the Otley story was the sequence of about three pages or so of scenes in the forest and the shark just coming out and munching people. Like, it was just a great, I mean, like, admittedly, it was the same, like, the first time funny, second time okay, annoying, third time hysterical. You know, like, it was...
It left the boobs and a leg.
Yeah.
I don't think this book should have been made.
Why?
Because we can't let the sharks know that we know. And I feel like now they know we know, and now they're going to be all the more dangerous.
it's written proof now.
So I feel like in that sense, Ryan Otley is a traitor to his race.
So can we say species?
Yes.
Just so that we don't say.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Good
race
point.
Traitor.
Good point.
Would be wonderful.
But yeah, no. I mean, we Neesman and I talked to Ryan and Jason at C2E2 about this, and as I'm sitting there, I knew nothing about this book going into that interview, and as they're telling me about it, I'm like, this sounds ridiculous. but honestly, for five.
I wrote that in my review. This book is ridiculous.
Yeah, but for $5, it was a lot of good art and fun story. It was good laughs. It was good. I don't blame you at all for your pick.
It was a good pick. It was fun to write about, but also after like a little while, it's like I got nothing else to say about this.
Sometimes it could just
be a week, but
yeah, sometimes it could just be fun, you know.
And there it was a really good good for this week. I was very happy with it. So
right.
If it sounds like something you might like, it's definitely worth picking up if you can find it.
Which is, and I thought it was equally startling that you picked it and enjoyed it because it's so much fun, because you don't like fun.
Wow.
So,
totally yeah. Not sick of that joke.
Neither are we.
Oh God, you guys are in the same room, you're gonna gang up on me.
No, he's in the kitchen. Oh. I can't even see him.
Your apartment is like the size of a closet. You're in the same room.
We couldn't look at each other, that's the problem.
Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
That's because Ron slowly masturbates while he podcasts.
Wow.
And then it got inappropriate 10 minutes in.
That was fast. That's a record.
All right. Well, anyway, so some other notable books that came out this week. I'm probably the only one who picked up Hulk number 23.
Yeah, I'm reading in trade, so I didn't.
Okay, just Hulk. And this was the cover was just Who is the Red Hulk? And it had the Red Hulk holding his hands up to the air. And as we knew from Hulk 22, that Red Hulk was General Thunderbolt Ross. And Gary, who wrote the post for us on ifanboy.com, was correct. This issue basically explained it all, went back, dialed everything back, and explained how he could become the Red Hulk. And it shows that Gary was 100% about everything. All his crazy crackpot Hulk theories were totally correct. So much so that I wonder if Gary Lewis actually is just Jeff Loeb screwing with us.
I'm afraid of this person.
I know. It's amazing.
If he can figure this out about the Red Hulk, what can he know about me?
But this is interesting because it was a big artist jam, and it had art from Ed McGuinness, of course, but also Herb Trimpe, Tim Sale, Dave Stewart, Dale Keown, Sal Buscema, Ian Churchill, Lineal Yu, John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, Mike Diodato, basically like just anybody who's not Todd McFarlane who worked on the Hulk that's still alive basically drew some pages of this issue, which is great. And the art was a lot of fun, and it explained everything. But you know, it I'm not even reading the storyline, and now I know what's going on. So if you're curious about the whole Hulk thing, this is a great issue to jump on with because it just explains the villain.
You know, I think it's a testament to Loeb's writing on this book that the mystery worked.
Yeah.
And that the clues were there enough for somebody to pick up on them, put them together, but not everyone did that. They weren't so obvious that everybody knew the answer.
Yep.
And this is somebody incredibly devoted and somewhat insane. Take the time.
So in that sense, clearly whatever he laid in there as clues worked and worked out well.
Absolutely. And honestly, like, you know, I know sometimes we've been critical of Loeb's writing and stuff like that. This issue was written really well. I mean, like, there was nothing made me groan, nothing made me annoy, like it was good.
Oh,
so.
The humanity.
And well, yeah, that was bad. But they didn't show that line in here. So
I think it was a joke.
What?
You think that was a joke? Like in retrospect, was that written as a joke? Sincerely.
I think a little bit of both. I think it was a sincere joke. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's no excuse.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I just want to know the only mystery that this issue didn't solve is where General Thunderbolt Ross's mustache goes when he becomes the Red Hulk.
Because
he's got that big bushy white mustache and the Red Hulk doesn't.
It goes to Sam Elliott. They share.
It's like Captain Marvel with the bands.
Yeah. It's timeshare mustache.
It's like Firestorm.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not sure how.
Actually, it's not like Firestorm.
I know, but yeah. I wanted to say that.
Anyway, yeah, no, it was good. The issue had MODOK. It had the leader. It was. I mean, it had LMDs. It had everything any Hulk fan would want. So it was enjoyable. Like I said, I've not read. After I stopped buying Hulk on like issue 3, I haven't read a single drop up until like this past couple of months, and it's been fun. So
it's a fun book, definitely. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Power Girl 13 came out this week, and this is the first issue of the new creative team. So we put Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, and Amanda Connor behind us. We had a good 12 issues, and now we see what happens next. This is Judd Winnick on writing and Sammy Basri on the art, who I've never seen before, but she is fantastic, assuming it's a woman. It's a different style, but it's very nice. It's a sort of clean. It's a style you don't see a lot in comics. It's not something I read in many other books. It has a very sort of European influence to it, and this was they've changed. I mean, it's still firmly set in the world that we had before in Power Girl, but now it's more in the DCU. And this is totally tied into what's going on in Generation Lost, and there's a lot more characters in here. Before, Power Girl is basically on her own. There was occasionally guest stars, but she was basically existing in her own bubble. But here she's firmly planted back in the world. But they do that while also maintaining what we had before. So at least half the issue is devoted to her business and her running her company. And the big cliffhanger is about her company, not her superheroing. And it was really nice and really good in a completely different way, which I appreciated. Because I didn't want them to try to ape what the other team did. Just try to riff on that. I want them to go their own way and tell their own story. And they have done that. But since it's so good, it's nice that there's not a big drop off at all. If you enjoyed it before and you dropped it, I'd suggest people jump on it now because it's just as good, just good in a different way. But I know a lot of people liked it, so I'm gonna toss in this book to Ron so he can see the art. I missed here. Catch.
Did you fall?
He's got an X in front of him, and I hit the X, which is appropriate. It was really nice story.
I like this art.
Yeah, the art's really nice.
That's really nice.
It's funny. She's watching The Wire with her new young partner, introducing her to Omar and dealing with a business, dealing with superheroing, dealing with Maxwell Lord. It's really, really good. Really, really good stuff. Really solid comic book superhero stuff. It really puts her back into the world really nicely. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Wow. This art is really – it's a weird Phil Noto-esque look to it.
But much more fluid. It's not stiff.
Yeah.
Phil Noto's art is. I think it's very European.
Yep.
It's not painterly, but it's got that feeling of painterly. It's got sort of texture to it.
Yeah, I know. It's good. I like it. I dig it. I'm still not going to read it, though.
That's okay. But
although I did enjoy the first Power Girl trade. I will admit that.
Yeah.
So
if you dropped off Power Girl, a 13 is just as good. Check it out.
Good jumping on point.
Yeah.
Cool.
I read Dynamo 5, Sins of the Father, number 1, and I haven't read any Dynamo 5 before.
Yep.
So I decided this would be a good chance to check the book out, and it was okay.
It's interesting on the Don't Miss podcast earlier in the week. Not only did we talk to the Seabear Grizzly Shark guys, but we talked to Jay Ferber from Dynamo 5. It's interesting that because he's moving away from the ongoing to the miniseries Hellboy format.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a 5-issue miniseries of the Sins of the Father storyline, but this is really issue 26 of the series.
Mm-hmm. It's a series that, and I've read I think the first 3 trades, maybe two, but it really is one of those ones that sort of reads as an ongoing.
Yeah, totally.
So starting
totally.
Where you are, you don't get any of the buildup or the punching for the change.
Yep.
Which I had spoiled for me by listening to the podcast, but I can roll with that.
Sorry,
it's okay.
But it's definitely firmly existing in Ferber's, superhero universe as well as the bigger Image universe. And it's got Supreme and Omni-Man and Captain Dynamo in the flashback, which is pretty cool. But, I mean, it still carries through the vibe of – it feels like an X-Men book to me. Yeah.
It did read very much like an 80s Marvel comic, and that a lot of the dialogue was very expository.
Yes, yeah.
Which was hard to transition into. But yeah.
If you read the earlier trades, they don't feel like that. They feel like that, but with the good side of it, not the mm-hmm. bad part, I think. Yeah. I'm guessing. Was it just a lot of catch-up, I assume?
Either yeah. Kind
of, you know, it's a jump-on point, basically, so.
I did enjoy the whole flashback scene with Omni-Man and Supreme and
yeah. I said on the podcast, I'm like, I want a series of that.
Yeah,
you know, like I would love to see more Captain Dynamo, to be honest with you, because it's just, and it's funny because it's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, it's this thing that gets flashbacked every once in a while and gets mentioned here and there, and I guess I wouldn't want to ruin it by having like a Captain Dynamo series, you know, because it would, you know, because it's so what makes it special is that you just get glimpses and mm-hmm. and you wonder about it, but still every time he goes back to him, I'm like, ooh, I want to, you know, flesh that character out, but yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I really did. I mean, I love this book, and this is a lot of fun. And the new artist actually is Julio Brilha, picking right up where Mahmoud Asrar left off. You know, very similar style, very similar look. So.
The problem here is that every time Ferber discovers somebody,
yeah.
They hire him somewhere else because he doesn't get paid to work on these books.
He's inadvertently scouting for yeah. Marvel and DC.
Ferber got this. Ooh, yeah, Ildre worked out really well, and then Mahmoud. Yeah, that's nice. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name, but he's good.
Good times. Yeah, no, it was really good. It was really good. But so, what also was good, Amazing Spider-Man continues to be fantastic.
This Grim Hunt is one of the best. I mean, we're only two issues in, but one of the best storylines I've done in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's building off of the Gauntlet, but it's, I think it's really has a lot to do. Joe Kelly and Michael Lark is really what makes it so special.
Yep.
Kelly is just great, and it's just Michael Lark. This is just beautiful stuff.
And I will forgive my criticism for last week with the use of Ezekiel, and this is the spoiler. The swerve is that it wasn't actually Ezekiel, so it was Chameleon posing as Ezekiel. So I was like, okay, that's okay then. They get a pass.
Yeah, as I was reading this, I was thinking, oh, this would be so perfect if Ezekiel was not here, and then they pulled the mask off, and I went, yes.
Oh, a good question is, how do they know about Ezekiel?
I don't know. Who knows. I stopped reading it when Ezekiel showed up.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But no, this is, I mean, it's, I mean, Lark, I mean, we know, I mean, Lark and even, who's coloring him? Who colored this? Matt Hollingsworth colored it. I mean, like it gives that feel that like it definitely has a lot of presence. You know, it has a lot of like what's the word I'm looking for? It's the setting is just like this takes place in the rain and at night.
Oh, the scenes in the rain were just gorgeous.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. It got a lot of texture to it. You know?
Yeah, Michael Lark's back.
And I like it when Hollingsworth when he colored it like pow. You know, this book is like amazing.
And Matthew Southward did art assists, whatever that means. So this was like, it's too bad Josh didn't buy this. Like his triumvirate of favorite people working on this book.
Well, I didn't know that it was going to become the best book ever. I have very competent comic book shops near me. I can get the issues, and it's Marvel. They will reprint it in a week because it will sell out.
the backup with, what's his name? Max Fiemora.
Yep.
Yeah, it was just as good still. And honestly, the two-page Marcos Martin with the Fantastic Four this time, awesome.
Yeah, this is a bang for your buck series right now. And this is, you get three stories. They're all great.
Yep.
Fine. And, I will read it. Just fine.
Okay, Michael, what about Josh? Will Josh read it?
I have gotten mixed up in my head. I have to go. Excuse me. What happened? I was bound and gagged.
Oh, so that's how it is in Michael Lark's house.
It's like Rick Remender's house. I'm going to tell you something, man, and you're going to be shocked, but I didn't buy powers.
And you missed out, my
friend.
Bad move. Back to form. Back to form.
No, I think I'm done.
This was really good.
Yep.
It was really good.
It was about Walker.
It went in a direction I did not expect. So I mean, I guess the first arc is over. Now we're onto a new arc, or whatever. But I don't want to ruin it for you, Connor, because I want to make you read it. But
I'm not gonna read it.
Yes, you are, because I'm gonna hand you the freaking book, and you're gonna read it because you're in the other room.
I think the series ended perfectly. And this is kind of like I feel about like shows like Angel or whatever. Like when it perfectly ends, I don't need it anymore, no matter how good it may be afterwards.
Yeah, this was good though.
It was. It was not. It had none of the issues that we had spoken about in some of the prior recent issues.
Yes.
Issues. Too many times. But you know what I'm saying. And it had some more of those 50s flashbacks, which are always good.
Yes, and a nice little homage to the that famous painting with the diner.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I saw that. I don't know if there's that much to say about it, other than I would say it was just good again, and I was very happy about that.
It felt like how it should read. It felt right.
Yeah.
And the art looked great. There were some great layouts. There was some great use of color. There was a great use of angles and you know, points of view and things like that. You could tell that Omega is really, I think, you know, trying to push, you know, gently. You know, but not just do the same thing, but also not be too overdramatic.
He's kind of always done that. I feel like it's one of those things. Like this is a book where he just gets to play.
Yeah,
and he gets to do whatever he wants, and he's always, I think, pushed the boundaries of layout. And when they opened this up to the bigger format that they went to, the more pages and everything, he didn't have to cram as much into a page, and it breathes a lot more than it used to.
Yeah,
you might like that or not, but. Even the title page in this thing is spectacular.
Well, I really love the two-page spread in the beginning when Walker punches the wall and then breaks down, and the use of black and just like that. I mean, the two-page spreads are really where the art sings in my mind. Yeah,
it is a nice page.
It is. It's two pages, actually. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So, if you wanted to if you've never read Powers before and you want to catch up, I would suggest you pick up one of the first collections or the first trades from the original series that Connor mentioned that did end perfectly. And you could do that at InStock Trades, who we want to thank for sponsoring this episode of iFanboy. At InStockTrades.com, that's where you can save boatloads of cash when you order your trade paperbacks, collected editions, all hardcovers, anything else you want there. You save up to 37% off. They do free shipping on orders over $50, which if you're ordering stuff that's equaling over $50, it's probably going to be heavy. They're probably an omnibus in there maybe. So free shipping is definitely key. They got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. They get everything from Diamond, so anything that's printed in the comic book industry you can get. Every Wednesday they update their new releases, so you can check those out. And when you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours. I like the usually. I never noticed that before.
Sometimes it's in the back.
Yeah, they usually ship within 48 hours. So go to www.instocktrades.com and get on board with Powers and other great trade paperbacks today.
You want the definitive hardcovers. That's what you want. There's three of those out right now. I got that.
Nice. Yeah.
They're good.
That's good stuff.
That is good stuff.
Detective Comics 866 was a one-shot written by Denny O'Neill with art by Justin Gwynn. And this was just a fantastic Batman story, which was a modern-day Batman Dick Grayson story that flashed back to a case when he was Robin that connected to the case he was working on. But the standout was the flashback was done in sort of a faux 60s style and had dot pitch overlay on it. And the pages were distressed, so it looked like an old book.
You notice that Dustin Gwynn's one of those guys who has gotten better with every single issue he's ever put out?
Yes.
And like at this point, like I feel like he should be getting a little more... You know, he gets a lot of work, but his name doesn't get passed around. He's some of those guys. Like, have you noticed he's real, real good?
There's some gorgeous pages in here. I mean, a lot of the moody stuff he does really well with the coloring. I mean, he does the whole thing. I don't think he colors the issue, but when he does the covers, he does the whole process. He just does really well. He just handles really well color and darkness and shadow. He's getting better, but I really love the 60s style. It just sort of flashbacky to the Bill Finger era. Mm-hmm. But still done modern in a 60s meshed with the animated series style, and I really like the fact that it had production over it. It had, you know, wrinkled pages and rips and dog ears and things like that, and that was really cool. Just really solid one shot in between arcs before they jump back into whatever they're going on in Batman now. But this was just a really great one issue. And Denny O'Neill, you know, he knows Batman. Mm-hmm. And he knows how to write him. He knows how to write the characters. So it was just a really great issue. And then you had Return of Bruce Wayne number 3, which was all about pirates.
I could read this as an ongoing series.
I have loved this so far, and every issue I love it more. I've really enjoyed it, and I kind of didn't expect to. And that's the thing about Grant Morrison. You never know what you're going to get. Yep. But occasionally, like, and this was just fun. I mean, it really, like, Batman fighting pirates, and it wasn't even so ridiculous.
It wasn't at all. I mean, it was like I'm trying not to ask any questions about how he's jumping around and all this, you know, all this sort of, you know, it doesn't matter. Just enjoying it, you know. And
it's sort of a miscalculation at the end there. Maybe that Jonah Hex movie will be really big and they can have him cross over.
Yeah, when I read that, I'm like, ooh, I wonder what Josh O'Connor think of this.
It doesn't matter. I think it'll be awesome.
No, I agree with that.
When I turned the page and I was like, oh, Jonah Hex. Any more Jonah Hex is fine with me.
Here's the thing, though. I think Jonah Hex shoots Batman. Like, Batman beats everybody, but I think Jonah Hex kills him.
Quite possibly.
This is fun. This is goofy fun, but it's also it's not like over the top goofy like Seabear and no. Seabiscuit, whatever that book was called.
Seabiscuit.
It's that 60 that Silver Age style that Grant Morrison likes, but in a modern way. I mean, this is totally a Silver Age story, Batman through time, and that you would have to be really good to tell it now and have it not be too goofy to bear. And I think that's what Grant Morrison excels at.
I also like that they don't spend that much time in the present explaining things. Yep. There was a couple of pages, but besides that, we were in the past. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they'll keep you up to date, but they didn't have. He just didn't spend a lot of time explaining it, which is fine. I don't need that.
Well, what I thought was interesting is it's just like a reminder that there is a bigger story going on here, and we're going to get to a resolution, and these are the people who are going to do it. But you don't need to know exactly, you know. I mean, like, don't worry about that. Pirates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
And the black pirates dialogue. That's I can go with that all day.
Yeah.
And all night. I'm totally cool with that. Totally cool with that. Battlefield's Motherland number one came out. This is the I've lost track. This is another Battlefield's story.
It is the fifth? Sixth, I think. Jeez. Yeah, this is the final series, the second volume.
Okay. Motherland is a continuation from the very first one, Night Witches, where this pilot, whose name I do not remember, same team, Garth Ennis writing, obviously, and Russ Braun doing pencils and inks. I really liked, by the way. It's a little later. She's bitter and battle worn, and she's a very good pilot. And I liked this a lot. It was a good continuation of.
Oh, she's not just bitter and battle worn. She's insane.
No, that too.
She's talking to her dead pilot, gunner or whatever it was, a navigator.
She's very good at killing Nazis.
Yeah, well, that's all that matters.
Yes, what I'm saying. Business is a booming, cuz.
No, this was good. It wasn't quite for me as good as the first series, but that's because I think that was more compelling because the stakes were higher. This is sort of there's a lot of talking in this, which is fine. Yeah. It just wasn't after the first issue, of Night Witches. It was like oh crap, this is more like building. I think I'm sure it'll hit the old crap part because we always do in the mm-hmm. series. But it's real solid, real good. And like you know, he writes a great fighter pilot scene. You know,
yeah,
scenes with the scenes with the dogfights in the air were really compelling and really exciting.
And we've seen that from, and that was in the first Night Witches, and then also that Flight of the Phantom Eagle. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one thing he does really well, which is pretty fascinating. And I really, like, I spent a lot of time reading those, or you know what I mean?
Rereading them.
Yeah, just going through those the sequences in those dogfights.
Gee.
Avengers number 2, which is the 50th Avengers book.
Yep.
This month, I think. all right, here it is. I'm done with this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
For whatever, like, it's okay. I just don't love it, and I'm over. It's just too much.
That's weird because this is the most purely Avengers book.
Yeah, I know.
This is
what
you like the most. This is like the most throwbacky to the 80s.
Okay, here's my question. So, what is it that causes them to all have to stand together at all times, no matter what two people are doing?
Yeah.
It's just like they go like these two guys have to go in a room and all of a sudden there's 15 people standing behind them. We'll just wait for them to finish so we can all chat.
Well, there was a couple of weird kind of funny things in here that I wanted to highlight, which is the fact that he had Maria Hill refer to Cap as Bucky Cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought because that was kind of funny because that's what we say. You know, and then early on in the scene when Tony Stark and Spider-Man and Marvel Boy are working in the workshop. Did you see on that two-page spread?
Yes.
In the upper left-hand corner, that the Avengers are eating pizza and watching them work.
This is what I'm talking about.
And not only that, but Wolverine and Spider-Woman are like Wolverine's tangling her hair in his claws, and she's zapping him. Like what? Like what?
Yeah.
They're totally doing it.
Yeah, totally.
It was all right. But at the end of the day, I don't know. It's just them talking. It's been all this setup for a while.
Well, I don't know, but I really like the. I mean, I love time travel stuff, and I love the alternate reality things. And so, like when Marvel Boy made his little device, and you saw glimpses into the different realities and futures of the Marvel Universe, I was like, I got all giddy.
Yeah,
and,
that was cool.
Yeah, and just
I'm also totally not interested in the next Avengers thing. That's the other thing. Like.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think you're prejudging. Yeah. I think you're prejudging.
And that Well, no. I mean, like, it's just the – I can tell what kind of story – I feel like I can tell what kind of story. If afterwards is great, great. I'll go back and read it. It's fine. But, like, I just – I don't know. I'm not digging it so much. So, yeah. I also – I don't – for some reason, Romita's not clicking with me on this at all.
Yeah, it's interesting about that. I still think we're in the – he was doing this during Kick-Ass Rush time.
Well, I, you know. Yeah.
But then there's Spider-Woman's hair, which is, well, which is a little rough. But
you've got John Romita, right?
Yeah, I have. Yes, so. I have. But I did really enjoy the last two-page spread and Apocalypse. And what I love
that
is by having
– That too. I was like, oh, I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's your X-Men bias. There you go. Yeah. There it is. Yeah. So but and that, it looks like it's the Apocalypse from Age of Apocalypse. That's the same color combination he was wearing with that. Yeah, so.
I think this is the most classic Marvel book right now.
Yeah.
It really delves with all the stuff that was classic about the Marvel, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And you could say that's a problem with the industry now, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
I really respect that in a way. Like, that's what people – it's a different thing for Bendis to do with this. And I'm sure that there are people who want it, but it's just not my kind of book, I think.
Which is weird because you're the Avengers guy.
Yeah. It's also like he's just been doing it for a while. You know what Connor just said about Powers?
Yeah.
I kind of feel that way. Like, I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was the argument when, you know, when this whole shakeup happened, that maybe that was the point where he should have moved on, you know. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. It hit all the notes I'd want to hit out of a comic book. It wasn't a five. It wasn't amazing, but it was a solid four, you know. So, but as far as hidden notes and not working, Justice League Generation Lost number four, the hotly controversial Justice League Generation Lost, which I bought in issue format. Just saying.
If I bought it, I would have totally bought it digitally.
Last issue, I was saying how it wasn't working for me. This issue, it started working. It clicked.
This issue was great.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I think they got it. I felt as if the past three issues have been really redundant and really just kind of repetitive and just like, you know, over and over and over again. But this one was great. It was really good.
I like how they keep adding a new member of the team with every issue. So we're slowly building back our semblance of the old JLI team. So in this issue, we had the Rocket Red return to join Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Fire Ice, and Captain Atom.
Yeah.
And I felt like the tone was really right in this one. It was really funny. The relationships are – I mean, they have a great and interesting relationship because these are people that work together for a long time, a very important time in their lives. But they're not all friends.
Are they doing VOD?
They're not doing vaudeville. Oh. It's funny, but it's not vaudeville, and it's not the...
Well, Giffen isn't writing it. I mean, Giffen's just doing the layouts.
Yes, Winnick is writing it.
I'm sure he could sneak some vaudeville in.
Oh, sure.
But Connor, to your point, I mean, like, even what was great about this issue is that even the characters realized that the JLI basically is getting back together with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, which I thought was great, which is, and, you know, and I actually do like the Maxwell Lord, you know, is back and what's the deal and his powers and all that sort of stuff.
I really like that a lot. I think actually, Ron, you might want to consider the new Power Girl because it's very heavily tied in, and that was a lot to deal with in that issue, was what they went into and dealt with.
I'll make a deal with you. I'll read it if you read Powers.
All right, fine.
Okay, there you go. Oh. See, we're bridging gaps here. And okay, so
no one
I read.
Wants me to read the stuff I don't want to read. Like, fine.
Well, no, I read Power Girl. Connor reads Powers, and Josh, you keep buying Avengers.
What do I get out of this? I don't care if you guys read that stuff.
So, yeah, no, but so now I'm actually excited for the next issue of this.
Yeah, this is really good.
Yeah. And I guess the bigger question is, will the next issue be available digitally as well?
Yes, they're all.
Okay, the whole thing, yeah.
All the issues are available. You can buy the first three for $1.99.
Oh, there you go.
So, if you like JLI, if you want to read the issues, you can find them online at some company. So that's what we thought of this week's books. But you can go to ifanboy.com. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review your books in it. You can come back and write reviews. We like to spotlight those reviews on the show in the form of user reviews. The first user review is from Marcus Brute, who reviewed Superman number 700 and gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And 6.2% of the iFanboy community made this their pick of the week. And this is Marcus Brute's entire review. This review is just for the JMS story. Wow, a story about how despite being extremely powerful, Superman can't save everyone. It'd be exciting if I hadn't read it 100 times before. At least he didn't cry this time.
Oh, God.
We should back up. Superman 700 was the big 700th issue. There was three stories. The first was written by James Robinson. The second was written by Dan Jurgens, and the third was written by J. Michael Straczynski, who was the new writer of Superman. Like Dan Jurgens, of course, being the seminal 90s writer for Superman and Robinson being the guy who just tied up and wrote had written the book for the last couple of years. So you had all three eras represented here.
Yep. I bought this because I swore I'm going to buy all these milestone issues. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought the Batman one.
I bought the Super.
No, I bought the ones. I don't disagree with the review of JMS's story, but I think to paint this whole issue as a one is harsh.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I know. I agree with what he said entirely, 100%. I'll get to that in 2 seconds. I don't know. The James Robinson bit, I hate Parasite. It's a thing. Like, I don't like him. I hated him when he showed up in the animated series. So I was like, eh, it looked nice.
But I was gonna say, I for some reason I love the art.
Yeah, no, the art was really nice.
Bernard Chang's art was really good.
There's a shot where he punches Parasite to go through like all the bookshelves and things like that. That was a really nice panel.
Yes,
it was really good stuff. It was really well drawn, and it was fine.
This is my favorite story of the three.
Yeah, no, this was clearly the strongest.
I actually really liked the Dan Jurgens story. I don't know why.
It was great. It was good.
It was totally throwbacky, and like I could see a lot of people looking at it and be like, "Oh, it was hokey," and it was. Oh, I don't know. I really enjoyed it.
Yep.
I really dug it. And then the Straczynski story is exactly what I don't like about Straczynski's work.
The whole thing's going to be awful. This whole run's going to be awful.
The Alex Kintner scene, for those of you who watch Jaws. Like, I was thinking, well, maybe he had something to do with this person, and she's mad at him because, like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, it's dumb.
The premise is Superman comes back from the war that he had with the Kryptonians, and he's testifying before all these congressional hearings, and he's giving a press conference, and some woman comes up to him and slaps him in the face because her husband died.
And it had nothing to do with anything.
He
had a tumor.
He had a tumor that the woman claims that had Superman been around and she was able to get in touch with him like she tried, he would have been able to use his X-ray vision to find the tumor, then use his heat vision to kill the tumor without hurting any other part of her husband, and that, thus he would have survived.
I'm going to go around beating up CEOs because they could have hired me.
Yeah.
I was so annoyed. And then I'm going to walk the earth. I was like, oh, I'm going to hate this.
The walking the earth,
the sad face and everything. I was like, I don't want sad face wandering Superman. I do not want it. I think wrong. No,
right.
Sorry.
Everything about this was derivative.
We just lost.
Not many, I don't think.
Oh, they love him.
They love him. Why?
They hate it when I don't like him.
He's awful.
No,
it's derivative and repetitive, and like he did the Walk the Nation with Midnight Nation years ago, you know, which was great, but I don't know. I'm prejudging this whole what he's going to do, and I'm sure so I'm not going to read it because I don't like Superman, but I just don't like the whole opening thing with the woman and her husband dying this could have happened. Her husband could have died 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, at any point in Superman's history.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. Yeah, that was really, really stupid. I'm going to read it just to see what happens, because I like Superman. I'm not going to
like it.
Be in for it. If it gets horrible, I'll drop it. I've dropped Superman many times before, but I'm curious just to see the first couple of issues. I really like Eddie Barrows. I thought he was really good in this
issue. I love Eddie Barrows. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
He was originally on Rucka's Action Run back when he was good.
Back in the day.
I think he's better, too. I actually liked the... I mean, some of the interactions were good. I thought he wrote a good Flash, but the base concept of the story is bad. That's the problem. I thought the characterizations were fine.
I agree.
It was the idea that he's going to be depressed because this woman, her husband died, and he's going to.
I can't save everyone.
Oh God. Oh,
God, I just feel like he's dealt with that a million times. In fact, you know what it felt like? It felt like a really bad issue of Astro City.
Yes.
I feel like Kurt Busiek dealt with this in Astro City number one.
Yes.
And I was like, all right, whatever. And that's
totally that's a great description.
We're done with that. Sorry. Neb wrote about Seven Psychopaths number two, gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. Nobody picked it as a pick of the week. And he said, it's not that the story is bad. In fact, I'm intrigued by it. I always love these assassinate Hitler stories, don't we all? But it just doesn't have the room to breathe or develop any sort of identity. The characters definitely suffer in this sort of structure. I really, really want to love this book, but it's just not gelling for me. Also, with only one issue left, I'm afraid that this story will fail to deliver. Here's hoping that it finishes strongly.
This, I thought, was the second most fun book after the Sea Bear.
This was very close to being pick of the week.
Yeah. The other thing is it's a series of minis, so the story is not going to tie up in the next issue. It's going to lead to the next part of the story.
It's by Sean Phillips, who's one of my favorite artists, top five probably. It's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous, but in a really wonderful way. I actually see what he's talking about. I don't necessarily disagree with him, but I didn't let it bother me, I suppose. I think that there was a lot of characters, and I was like, I don't remember what happened. Then I was like, I don't care. He's finding crazy people, and then they're going to go – and a bunch of them get killed right away. Just like it was –
yeah, it was
nuts.
Funny, and it was over the top, and it was fun. And there was a great – I don't have it in front of me. I left it back in New York, but there was a funny – one panel that I loved that I wanted to have put in the panel's article, but I was in an airplane, so I couldn't do it.
I'm guessing. This is my guess. It was when they were all having dinner, and they go to talk to the really demonic, crazy guy, and he doesn't say or do anything.
Yeah, there's just a lot of great single panels. There's a lot of great over-the-top dialogue. Like, we're going to, you know, a lot of it, we're going to go assassinate Hitler, come with us kind of stuff.
The leader, the Colonel Sanders-looking guy, he's great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is just really fun. It's that pulpy sort of 60s movie, but with an edge kind of story.
I don't know who this writer is, but it's great.
Well, I think he's French. I think because it was a French book that's been translated to English.
Oh, is it? And Sean Phillips still did it?
Yeah.
Whatever. It's great. Did I mention that?
No, it's really fun. So those are the books that you talked about this week. You can go to fanboy.com, like I said before, and you can rate and review books. Write your user reviews. If they're good, we'll use them on the show. And while you're at iFanboy, you can go and check out the website to help us out. And how do you do that? Well, if you like the show and you want to continue liking the show, you want it to keep going, you can come and check out some things on iFanboy and help. One is clicking on the website banners, the banners from advertisers. You can check out their products, their fine products and their services, and let them know iFanboy sent you, and that helps us out a lot. You can also go to iFanboy.com/Amazon, where we have our Amazon store. You click on the Powered by Amazon button, that'll take you to Amazon.com proper, and anything you buy on Amazon, we'll get a little piece of. Nothing comes out of your pocket. It all comes out of Amazon's pocket. And I actually just spent 10 minutes on the phone helping my brother do this yesterday.
Everybody owes, everybody pays.
Yeah, so that's a real good way to do it. You can even put that link from the button into your shortcuts, which is what I do, and you can never have to worry about Amazon. Fanboy.com/Amazon again. You can also buy t-shirts. We've got Fear Agent t-shirts. We found hidden below some other t-shirts about 10 Battle Pug shirts. So there's a couple of Battle Pug shirts left, and there's a Fear Agent shirt. So you can check that out at fanboy.com/store. And you can be a member. That's the best way to help us. For $4 a month or $42 a year, or $10 a month and $100 a year, you can be a Fanboy member. That gets you a prize pack, which includes stickers, buttons, a comic book from our collection, and the higher class $10 membership gets you a T-shirt.
Someone's going to get Superman 700.
We're actually out of the extra large shirt. So if you've become a member in the last month or so, and you ask for an extra large, it's going to be delayed while we get more printed up. So that's why you haven't seen your membership, if you've been wondering. And I got really emotional about it just there, so I'm sorry.
I got a little choked up.
Yeah. Here's the picture of sad Superman.
So that's how you can help us out. You go to fanboy.com/store. That's also where you can find out memberships and you can purchase those. Yep. And that's how you can really help us out.
Cool.
And we appreciate it, every one of you.
All right, so on to the email. Our first email comes from Rob, who says, I've been reading comics for many years, but have generally stuck to new releases of issues and trade paperbacks. Recently, after buying the digital version of Abnett & Lanning's Authority No. 1 for 99 cents, I was inspired to dip into my local retailer's back issues for the first time, hoping to pick up the whole run. I was shocked to find that every issue was selling for a dollar markup on the cover price. In fact, every single back issue in the store was marked up at least 50 cents to a dollar. Is this a common practice, or is my retailer perhaps overvaluing these back issues?
This is a great question. Because I think this goes to the heart of sort of how different stores do it.
Yes.
And if you go, like, there are some stores and they've got like a holdover policy from the 90s where, like, after you've taken the book off the shelf, it goes into the bins with a markup. If you go to Midtown Comics in the city, that's what happens. A lot of other places, like, they just let the old issues stack up on the shelves and you can pick them up there, you know, for the same price.
Cover price, yeah.
And then other places will put them in a bin, you know, especially this can happen at cons a lot, is they'll put them in a bin for markdown.
And they'll be, way marked down.
And
this is
funny. This is the first time I thought about it, but this is where I thought that it's possible that the digital revolution, if people can buy whatever issue they want, they're going to have to pay whatever new price is for those. This is where retailers can start getting rid of some of their back issues.
Yeah.
You know, if they start saying, like, we've got all these back issues, you sell them for a dollar, two, whatever, just to undercut the digital copies a little bit if people want them. I was, you know, like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's it's really fascinating. I mean, I think to your point about how there's no consistency anywhere, because like my first thought was, you know, was the latter, what you said, which is, you know, either I've seen, you know, I see back issues, and I'm talking more recent, within the past couple of, you know, like the recent Advent Landing was within the past 2 years. You know, a lot of the stores I know here in San Francisco, you can get those for cover or cheaper. Mm-hmm. You know, but then you mentioned Midtown, well, they'll mark it up, you know, and so there's little zero consistency in how stores handle back issues. My reaction was his shopkeeper is insane, but clearly he's not, because other people do that as well. Mm-hmm. So, just fascinating. I think you're totally right. I mean, the potential for back issues in both the real world and the digital world with digital are just is kind of fascinating, because it's like, you want to pick up a book, you want to check out all the back issues, just download them eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, but now this kind of thing where you know a new series starts and you want to get the back issues and they're not going to put them out digitally, well then go, you know, hunt down the back issues. It could help the stores, and the stores could, you know, undercut the digital. That's where they can undercut them.
Or if DC had gone so far as to say, here's authority number one and here's the rest of them, you might have just bought them all from them right then. Stuff's already out, the tiered releasing doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Make them available. They want them. Buy them.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Clearly, I mean that's the marketing, you know, genius of the digital thing. It leads to, like, this guy Rob buys one issue and likes it, so he goes to get the rest from the digital store or from the store itself.
One other thing to think about is with the way that the DC and Marvel, the Comixology reader and stuff like that, they actually have to go in and cut it up.
Yeah,
you know, by panel, which is probably why all 80 issues or whatever, 70 issues of Sandman aren't available, because
that's what nobody realizes about the digital stuff is that the amount of work it takes to get these comics converted to the digital formats is significant.
It's labor.
That's why the books also aren't going to be cheap.
Yeah,
super cheap, because there's actual labor behind this.
Yeah, everyone thinks just put the comic digitally and offer it for 99 cents. Well, there's a lot more involved in that.
There is.
And everybody gets their cut.
Yeah,
everybody gets paid.
Barry writes and says, I rarely see kids, maybe 15 or younger, reading American comics. I read a lot of manga as well as American comics, so they're not the problem. It seems to me that the generations of yesteryear, 85 and before, are still the ones reading faithfully. My question is this: do you still see the comic book industry growing in the future when the next generation has passed the torch, once the old generation stops reading? Will there be enough support to maintain an industry?
No.
I think there's a couple of generations. I think there was a big boom in the early part of the 2000s.
Yes.
Okay.
I think what we find with a lot of the people who watch the video show and listen to this show and come up with iFanboy came into comics in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the last big influx of readers.
Agreed.
They are gaining.
And a lot of them were lapsed readers. But
there are
a lot of
new people, but not as many as will die.
Yeah. No, so exactly.
That's the way we keep Scarfer Down Barbecue.
Yeah. I mean, like I'm giving, you know, I give my niece Tiny Titans every month, you know, with the hopes that when she gets out of second grade, she'll by the time she's 15, 16, she'll still be into it.
Because they'll be $8 an issue at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
12 for the digital.
Yeah. it's funny because I was doing my order with my store. I was just kind of updating all the subscriptions and stuff like that. I'm like, I spent a lot of money. If I get hit by a bus, the industry is going to feel it, and times that by the 4,000 other people just like me, and it's screwed. Everyone's screwed.
It's definitely a thing. Well, I do think that people have come in. It has. I don't think it's been a significant number.
Yeah.
This is no way. It's weird. Like, I don't feel like there's a way that they can get people to start reading comics now. As we've seen, like, movies are successful, but that doesn't. It hasn't translated to issues. It has translated to paperback sales. That's
well. The clear, obvious thing is trades and, you know, hardcover. That is the future of the industry.
Well, you're talking about different readerships too. I mean, people say when we talk about comic readers, what we're saying is people who go to the store every Wednesday to buy books. We're not talking about people who go to Barnes & Noble once and buy a couple of trades. That's a different kind of comic reader. Not somebody that's not the person we're talking about when we say comic readers.
Right.
We're talking about regulars every day, every Wednesday at the store.
That number has been flat for a long time.
Yeah, and you see the comics dollar sales have gone up because a lot more people are buying trades, and those are more expensive and generate more dollars.
Yeah.
But the issue sales are not going up; they're going down.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with either of those?
No, they're just different. We're just saying they're different in terms of. How do you grow that? I think digital will help.
Well, one of the things that's interesting, though, is that those issue sales are the precursor for what gets traded.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's why the whole system is fucked.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're going to have to adjust. And basically publishers are either going to have to take more of a risk and put stuff into collected form or trade paperback immediately and just take that hit without the sort of issues bankrolling that, I suppose.
Well, they're going to have to become – they might have to become like the book industry. Well, they're going to have to put a book out and hope it sells and give the writer and an artist an advance. And then, you know, that might be one way it has to go. Well, these DC OGNs that are coming out this year, the Superman Batman ones, will be interesting to see how those do.
Yeah.
But I mean, clearly the way the system is not sustainable forever. And everyone you talk to, whether on the record or off, will say that. It's just a matter of how it will get fixed.
Because they want to hang on as long as possible, like anything.
Yeah.
Totally. Like the New York State Legislature. No, I'm going to stop.
Anyway, so those are the emails. Very interesting questions. Shoot us an email if you have an interesting question at contact@ifanboy.com. And now for the voicemail. Our only voicemail this episode has got to be a joke.
Hi, Fanboy. This is Poser Duke from the forums. I have a question for Ron. Ron, you're the X-Men guy. You are the continuity guy. You are also the X-Men Forever, X-Factor Forever guy. Do you find that reading the Forever books confuses your sense of continuity in the straight-up 616 books? If so, how has that screwed you up? If not, how are you able to keep them apart? Josh and Connor, feel free to berate and mock Ron at any point in his answer.
Listen, Poser Dude, we don't need your permission to berate and mock Ron. We'll do that anytime we want.
I was doing it while he was listening to the voicemail.
So to answer your question, I'm really glad you...
Nerd.
I'm really glad you called in and asked this question, because this is the thing I've been afraid to admit, that I read these issues and I don't know which way's up. In one book, you got all the mutants and the Sentinels attacking them in San Francisco. In the other book, it's Remy Picard. And I don't know what's going on. Of course I know what's going on. I don't mix them up. I've been reading the Ultimate books for 10 years now. It's like, I think it's very clear. Like, there's no confusion as to what's 616 and what's not.
And there's the movies and there's cartoons and there's everything's got different continuity and it's not a problem.
Well, right. Somehow I can make the intellectual leap to think that, okay, this is a different continuity. It's a different story.
Well, wait. Now, presently, you can do that. I find that when I'm going back and, like, there was a Spider-Man story, and it could have been, 5 years ago, 6 years. I don't remember what was what.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens a lot. So,
that's because you don't get a lot of sleep.
Nah, I just don't. I don't devote memory to that stuff.
Well, the difference between that is, I mean, like if you go back, like for Spider-Man, for example, like anything that's been, the pages of Amazing Spider-Man, that's canon continuity, 616, all that kind of crap, right? But then, there have been all these little side diversions. I'm going back to remembering that. Remember what was that miniseries that was great with the different creative teams, and there were little stories about Spider-Man. Tangled Web, yeah, exactly. You might remember a great Garth Ennis story that Spider-Man wrote. That might not necessarily be in canon. It was just a Spider-Man story that was told, And I agree. I do concede your point, Josh, that it can be confusing. For example, all those the recent Marvel Knights change where they – right when they said, okay, Marvel Knights books are now going to be out of continuity, but it was right when Silver Surfer Requiem came out, like other stuff. Everyone's like – and Spider-Man, the Dark Knight Returns Spider-Man. What was it with Carrie Andrews?
Rain.
Yeah, Rain.
Apparently, I do remember everything, by the way. Yeah.
Exactly. But so I could see where is this in canon? Is this not? But I think the X-Men Forever stuff, it's clearly not. I mean it's
just different. I don't get confused when I watch different versions of James Bond.
Right, yeah.
The key to that for me is I don't care what the canon was.
Right, yeah, I do, but I can make the difference, yeah.
For me, all right, I remember stories. I remember things that creators did, so.
Yeah. It's not like I read an issue of what if the Phoenix survived? And I'm like, oh my god, this negates everything I've read since the X-Men. I know what if stories are little flights of fancy, And so I don't know. It's a subtle thing that maybe I take for granted, but I'm not confused about that at least.
Like there was this story where Superman got slapped by somebody and it wrecked his whole day,
and he walked the earth.
That didn't happen.
Right.
It's basically an internet troll.
Yeah, basically.
It's basically you've got this thing, and everyone's like, "We're so happy to have you back." And one person was like, "You suck," and he let that get to him.
Yeah, it's so true. It's
which is telling, by the way.
A little bit.
Because the writer has had to deal with internet trolls.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Me.
right, so if you, wow, you just admitted you're a troll. That's awesome.
No, I'm not. I'm a critic.
Pundit. You prefer pundit.
I do. I like that better. I take back critic.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have any questions you want to ask us, no matter how absurd, you can give us a call at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
Yes. Thank you. There's your show. Have fun. Go to ifanboy.com. You can comment on the show. You can talk about what you thought about Superman or any of the books. You can read the Pick of the Week review that I wrote for Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark. I love that book. I just want to go back and talk about how much I love that book. And all the other stuff. There's writers. There's stuff going up every day. Word Balloon. John is doing a show every 4 minutes, I think. And they're all Bendis just talking endlessly. Jimmy Palmiotti, who can also talk endlessly if you give him the chance. Very interesting stuff. Go to ifanboy.com. Check out all that stuff. Go to ifanboy.com/about, and you'll see who we is and all the where you can get in touch with us on the internet and things like that. And you can check out the video show there also. Last week was the anthology show where we talked about old ads, the Superhero Dictionary, and Cowboy Ninja Viking, which is awesome, by the way. I just want to agree with you on that.
Told you.
And then this next week, we're looking back at Frank Frazetta and Dick Giordano.
Yeah. Great creators.
Yes.
So, cool. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That's how people find it. That helps us out a lot for this show and for the video show. We really appreciate it. And for the Don't Miss show, all of our shows. Write us a review on iTunes. It really, really helps us out. Even better than that is tell your friends, your comic book buddies, your store owners, the bum on the street, the guy at the bar, the guy, girl you met at the party. Tell everybody you meet about iFanboy. Some of them will not be annoyed by it.
Some of them.
Yeah. So help spread the word.
I think we need to get 1,000 iTunes reviews.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Because we have a lot.
I'm going to look it up right now.
600 and a lot.
Yeah, let's do the push to 1,000. Let's
push
do
to
it.
1,000 is what I'm saying. Yeah. That would be awesome.
That
in people's faces.
Can we still crush around comics?
I think we have to do that at around 11 o'clock comics now.
Yeah, I think so.
We kind of won that other one. and then we captured their women and made them part of our household. We're Conan.
Wow,
indeed.
I'm speaking strictly in barbarian terms, which are not applicable to modern gender politics.
Yeah. I think we can take 11 o'clock comics. They're hanging by a thread.
Well, it's only a matter of time before Chris ends up in prison for something.
Yeah. So something, yeah, that's for sure.
Well, the only thing that's certain about that is that he won't remember what it was after the fact. Where is your witness on the night of November
12th? Apparently the lawyer's drunk too.
Chris will be his own lawyer.
It's drunk in night court. And so I think that's it for this week. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Joshua Flanagan, American.